Okay, well, welcome. I got Omer Dushek here today. Welcome, Omer.
Thank you, Paul.
Yes, a pleasure to have you. And this is the first series of the podcast, which is To Immunity and Beyond. So we're just collecting some of the very best immunology going on in Oxford and trying to create a way for people to digest it. So, and I think it's an interesting format because, as we were just saying, normally when you think about doing a review of a paper, you're thinking about the figures and looking at, it's a very visual experience. But actually, if you just want to know what the impact of the paper is and the concepts, that's actually kind of, you don't need the things in front of you, and it's much better described. So I'm really looking forward to hearing about this great paper that you just put on BioArchive as a preprint. So very current, and I hope the everybody listening will be able to access that and enjoy it. So let's get on with the podcast then. And the first question that I'm asking everybody is just to give us a little bit about your background and how you got to do what you're doing currently.
You want to start like at birth or?
Well, at the relevant time point, yeah.
Well, okay, I guess I entered university, you know, with aspirations of going to medical school. Mm-hmm. Basically my first year I got really interested in physics actually, and sort of decided to switch my focus and did an undergraduate degree in physics. Focusing on atmospheric physics, particle physics, atomic physics, and finally nuclear physics, you know, four different projects. But actually, at the end of all that, I sort of realized that to make advances in these fields, you really have to have sort of many, many years of education, basically, and sort of work. And so I decided to try something else altogether. And it was a course in mathematical biology that sort of changed my sort of thinking a bit. And I got really inspired. And so for my PhD, I decided to go into an applied math PhD to work with someone who's applying mathematical models to study immunology. And that was at the University of British Columbia. And it was really there that I started working on analyzing data that was coming out from T-cell experiments with a experimentalist in France, in Toulouse, called Salvatore Vallatutti. I would spend the summers in his lab, and I really got fascinated by it. And so for my postdoc, I decided to see if I could actually go and be in an experimental lab. And I interviewed here in Oxford, actually, with Anton van der Merwe, and he was happy to take the risk of having a mathematician join his lab to sort of hold pipettes. And it's really there that, you know, I learned how to do kind of experiments with T-cells. I guess I applied for these career development fellowships, and very fortunately got lucky to get one of those, start my own lab. And it was really supported by a variety of immunologists at the time at the Dunn School. So Anton was very supportive. Marion Brown was there as well. And Oreste Acuto was there as well. And they were all kind of provided, you know, support to people in my lab to help them train in experimental immunology.
Brilliant. Well, that's a fantastic story and really interesting way to interface the two bits. And I think that's one of the things that Oxford potentially can offer people is this, because it's so big and there's so many smart people around, that these interface areas are probably where all the growth really happens. So thanks. And Vallatutti, I seem to remember a paper from the early 90s, a very important one about serial signaling that was quite influential at the time. We didn't really understand quite a few of the elements, if it's the same person.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It is. He was working with Antonio Lanzavecchia at the time, and he showed that a single antigen could actually serial bind multiple T-cell receptors, and that was one of the mechanisms that was proposed for how T-cells have such high sensitivity. Yeah.
Great. Well, I'm glad he's still having an impact, a very much broader one. Okay, well, perhaps just give us a little bit about the background to the paper that you're just pre-printing and, you know, what were you trying to address in the paper?
Yeah, so the paper is really focused on trying to understand why CAR T-cells have low antigen sensitivity and then to improve that. And so maybe I could take a step back and talk about why we care about that in the first place. So,
yes, that would be good.
CAR T-cell therapy is a form of adoptive cell therapy where patients have their T-cells removed, genetically modified outside of the body to express a new antigen receptor, then reinfused back into the patient in order to make a population of T-cells that could now target, you know, new antigens. And so this therapy has been wildly successful for targeting, hematological cancers. And the targets are often surface proteins on B cells. For example, a protein called CD19 or BCMA or CD22 have all been really good targets. And these T cells then go on to kill all of the patient's B cells and have led to cures in many, many patients. The problem is that despite this initial success, many patients end up relapsing. In fact, I'm aware here in Oxford, this therapy, we started giving it here about a year ago, and already there's a large fraction of patients are coming back now with relapse, where these B cells basically come back. And what's interesting about these patients is that they still have their CAR T cells. And so the question was, you know, why are these CAR T cells no longer recognizing these B cells? And we now know that the reason for that is that unlike recognizing antigen through the T cell receptor, the native T cell receptor, where that, since that recognition can be very sensitive, for example, it's been shown that a T cell can recognize a single peptide MHC antigen using its native T cell receptors. For CARs, we now know that you need about 100 or 1,000 fold more antigens. And so what's happening on these patients is that their cancer cells simply have lower expression of the target antigen. And so, if in effect, these CAR T cells no longer see these cancer cells. And so we wanted to basically fix that.
Okay, so what you're saying is that the tumor has evolved in the face of the CAR T, but it's still theoretically a target. It hasn't lost the antigen entirely. It's just a kind of, it's just crept below the kind of, it's kept its head down, basically.
Yeah, effectively. I mean, there's a little bit of a debate about that, because often we use flow cytometry to decide whether or not a cell is tumor positive or negative. And so many patients can look low for antigen or completely negative by flow cytometry. But again, for flow, we think we need about 100 antigens on the surface to detect it. So we're not sure if they're genetically negative for the antigen or just below the detection limit.
Okay. So there's it's driven really by a clinical problem, really, where we got an incredible therapy, but it's created this sort of second wave of tumors that we need to readdress with better therapy.
Absolutely.
Okay. So what was your sort of kind of way of breaking that down into a tractable problem then?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, there was a few studies, at least two studies before our study originally in PNAS in 2023 that show that CARs had lower antigen sensitivity compared to the T cell receptor. And they basically used an experimental system where they could directly compare a CAR and a T cell receptor. And the way they did that is often to make chimeric antigen receptors that recognized peptide MHC antigen, which is not necessarily conventional, but it was just a way to compare their sensitivities. And what we could show at the time is we basically used a system to just reproduce that effect on cells. But what we found was that if you now present the antigen on in a reductionist system where you don't have any other ligands that are normally expressed on your antigen-presenting cells, that sensitivity difference between the TCR and the CAR disappeared. Okay, and so what it allowed us to do is to ask, can some of these other cell surface proteins on T cells contribute to the sensitivity differences that we see on cells?
So the essentially the interaction of the recognition element is essentially maintained, but you're thinking about co-stimulation.
Exactly. Okay. But what we basically found by screening different co-stimulation receptors is that the T cell receptor was very good at exploiting some of these, including one known as CD2. CD2 is a co-stimulation receptor or co-signaling receptor, also called an adhesion receptor, whose ligand, CD58, is ubiquitously expressed on all the cells in our bodies. And the T cell receptor, and so when this receptor is engaged, it improves the T cell's ability to recognize peptide MHC antigen by 100-fold. However, when a CAR is recognizing an antigen, it's unable to exploit CD2. And so its sensitivity is increased by just a few fold, about 4-fold. And so we basically traced this big difference in sensitivity between the TCR and the CAR to their ability to exploit this important adhesion molecule called CD2.
Okay. So, yeah, I think when I read the paper, that was one of my questions, really. It was like, well, we'll explain, I guess, in a minute about the CD2 finding. But you had to, there's many, many interactions going on in the cell surface, and presumably all of them could influence the sensitivity or the function of the T cell. So how did you get down to the CD2? I know it says Dunn School favorites. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, CD2 has a long history at the Dunn School. I mean, the way that we did it initially is where we looked at a number of different co-stimulation receptors that we knew were important for T cells, including CD28, 4-1BB, CD27, LFA1, for example, and CD2. And out of all those, the biggest effect on antigen sensitivity in particular was CD2. they all co-stimulate. So, for example, they all increase T-cell activation, but CD2 was the only one that enabled T-cells to respond at low antigen densities.
Okay. So perhaps, Omar, just relating to that, there have been advances in the design of CAR-Ts, some of which have taken into account the ability to co-stimulate. And maybe you could just put it in the context of those, because it sounded like, listening to some talks, that that problem had already been solved by some bioengineering.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's lots of different flavors of chimeric antigen receptors these days. And a lot of work has focused on trying to change the cytoplasmic tail of the CAR to include co-stimulation directly in the CAR. So, for example, second-generation CARs often include CD28 co-stimulation or 4-1BB co-stimulation. And we're also aware of some studies that are including CD2 co-stimulations directly in the CAR. The issue with that is that, again, although it increases the amount of cytokines the cells produce, we call that an increase in efficacy, it tends to not actually change sensitivity very much. So it doesn't let T-cells respond at low antigen densities. And we think the reason for that is related to the very specific mechanism for how CD2 functions. Its job is really to allow T cells to kind of grab the target cell, the cancer cell,
right,
and hold its membrane at a precise distance from the T cell membrane,
right,
in order for its receptor its antigen receptor to directly touch the antigen.
Okay, so it's kind of pegging the thing down, essentially.
Exactly.
Okay. So, but it is actually providing an additional signal too. It's not literally just adhesion. There is additional signaling.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in the early studies, people have argued that CD2 had an adhesion function like integrins and a co-stimulation function like CD28. So it seems like it can do both, and that's partly why we think it's actually quite an important receptor it's quite an important receptor. It's quite important that we get CARs to exploit this receptor.
Okay, so that seems like you've got yourself through a series of conceptual ideas and experiments to the nubbins of it, which is that you want to improve CD2 function in the context of a CAR-T. So, yeah, just talk us through the experiments and what you found, because this works. You know, it's very cool, I thought, the way you did it.
Yeah, so, I mean, we started this project really by knowing, based on previous work, that CD2 binding to CD58 aligns the two membranes at about 14 nanometers, which is exactly the same distance as the T-cell receptor binding peptide MHC. But now we had to re-engineer that size to accommodate chimeric antigen receptors who had an extracellular dimension that we didn't really know, and they target diverse antigens. And so the CAR antigen distance, we reasoned, would actually vary quite a lot depending on the CAR that's used and the target antigen. And so what we decided to do was to try to synthetically modify CD2 in order to change the interface height. And we did that initially by doing what other people did, which is to try to introduce Ig domains and other sort of structured domains into the protein. And all we could do there is really reduce the activity of CARs. And that kind of, you know, took a few years to realize. And then we reasoned that it might make sense to try to change the extracellular dimensions, not by an Ig domain, which is about 3.7 nanometers in height, but actually by sub 3.7 nanometer sort of increments. And that's where we use this other protein called CD43, which is a mucin. And so we use different amounts of its extracellular domain in order to elongate CD2. And remarkably, what we found was that if you elongate CD2, it reduces the ability of T cells to recognize antigen through their T cell receptor, because, of course, you're elongating the membrane, so you reduce the activity of CD2, but it actually improved the ability of T-cells to recognize antigen through CARs. And what was also quite interesting was that the degree to which we had to elongate CD2 varied depending on the extracellular hinge of the CAR, or the antigen that we were targeting, or the epitope on the antigen that we were targeting. And so as a result, we found that a different elongation of CD2 was really required to optimize the sensitivity of these different receptors.
Okay, because each individual CAR receptor is slightly different, and obviously the thing they're targeting, they can be any size, really.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, and actually, just while we're on the subject, then you mentioned that you would reduce the sensitivity for the regular TCR. So would that help with any of the kind of potential off-target effects of having, because these CAR-T still have an existing TCR unless people have gone to the trouble of knocking them out?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's actually an interesting point that I haven't really thought about. when you're using it at, when you're using T cells in an autologous therapy, there hasn't been really any cross reactivities associated with the TCR. But it's true that if you were going to use it as an allogenic therapy, right, you would then introduce a novel TCR into patients that could cause cross reactivity. And so you're right. If you then reduce the function of CD2 on the TCR, you potentially would reduce any of those potential cross reactivity.
Okay, but that but your main objective is just to kind of solve the problem of the lack of sensitivity, and so. You describe that lovely in a lovely way that you kind of have to micro-design the thing to kind of optimize. And there's a presumably some little Goldilocks zone where
too much or not enough
are bad, and you just get it right, and you get a quite a marked peak in function. So how much of an effect were you able to achieve with that?
Yeah, so we basically managed to produce elongated CD2s. That improved the sensitivity of CARs targeting peptide MHC to the same level as the TCR, and so we think that that's been, you know, giving us a lot of encouragement that you can have the same high sensitivity as a TCR with a completely synthetic receptor, provided you're able to match, you know, the size of CD2, give that synthetic receptor good adhesion function. We also managed in the paper to produce a CAR, a new CAR, which we call a compact CAR. And what this compact CAR has is basically a shorter extracellular domain. And it's actually an extracellular domain that we engineered to perfectly match that of the TCR. And that compact CAR now has also the same sensitivity as the TCR when using wild-type CD2. Again, to a peptide.
Okay, so you've got two methods for achieving the same end. So it's okay. And have people tried to shorten the CAR receptor before in order to achieve a similar thing?
Yeah, so it's been quite interesting. I mean, there's been some studies that have changed the extracellular hinge of the CARs. The issue with those studies is that, as a whole, they can be a little bit paradoxical because sometimes reducing the hinge improved sensitivity, sometimes it made it worse. And conversely, increasing the extracellular domain of the CAR sometimes improved it and sometimes reduced it. And we think the reason for that is that it all depends on the relative matching to wild, you know, to wild type CD2, CD58. So you could, like you said, there's this kind of Goldilocks, and you could basically, you know, overshoot or undershoot potentially in that way. And it's worth also adding that the second issue, and this has been really a big issue with studying sensitivity, is that it's very difficult to change the surface density of your target antigen when it's a folded, you know, when it's a structured protein on the cell surface. And as a result, a lot of these claims on sensitivity have actually come from inference, where you sort of, you know, you actually have one antigen density and you're just looking for CARs with different hinges and whether or not they perform better or worse. But it's been very, very difficult to change the surface density of, for example, CD19 on the surface of B cells.
Okay, so actually you need an assay for what would reflect the breakthrough cells, something with kind of low levels of expression that we're actually putting the thing to the test.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the technologies that we developed as part of our study. We developed a system where we could basically have a cell, in this case we used CHO cells, that don't have most of the normal proteins that our target cells express. And on its surface, we put a protein called Spycatcher, which was developed here in Oxford by Mark Haworth now many years ago. And by having this protein on the cell surface, what it allowed us to do is take purified antigens like CD19 that are fused to a spy tag. And now we could add it to different concentrations and do a titration, basically, on the cell surface. And so within just a few minutes, we get a panel of cells that have extremely low levels or different levels into the extremely low regime of these surface proteins. And then we could add our T cells and assess their ability to recognize, you know, target cells that have, you know, ostensibly as low as one CD19 molecule on their cell surface.
Okay, that's fantastic. And I'm super impressed by the kind of range of technologies to break it down. And I'm sure the readers of the paper will get the full picture when they look at it all. Okay, so but I guess a few kind of other things struck me reading it. So one was about kinetic segregation, which of course is another Dunn School favourite. And perhaps you could just describe the model. You know much more about it than I do. And then it struck me that there might be some kind of things that relate to the model that have come out of your study.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, kinetic segregation is a model that was proposed by Anton van der Merwe and Simon Davis here in Oxford. And it's a model that tries to explain how extracellular antigen binding to the T-cell receptor initially causes intracellular signaling. And this model now we believe applies to many other receptors, including these chimeric antigen receptors. And the way this model works is that it proposes that when T cells recognize antigen, a close contact is initially formed, and it's largely, we think, mediated by CD2, CD58 interactions. And this close contact now has about an intermembrane distance of about 14 nanometers. And at this close contact, these very large phosphatases that we know are on the cell membrane are excluded. These molecules have very large extracellular domains that exceed 14 nanometers. And so by definition, they can't really be in this close contact. What that does is it generates a kind of kinase-rich region within this close contact, such that if a T cell receptor, for example, goes into this region and binds ligand, it can stay in there sufficiently long to become phosphorylated.
Because you're excluding all the kinases from the region.
You're excluding all the phosphatases.
All the phosphatases, sorry. Yeah, yeah, you're concentrating the kinase.
Exactly.
Yeah.
However, if a TCR doesn't ligate, it doesn't bind any ligand, it just diffuses out and gets dephosphorylated and no triggering happens. And so, you know, the way that we think about this model as applying to CARs is that, you know, if you now elongate this close contact, which we've done now by, you know, increasing the size of CD2, eventually we believe that we would no longer be able to segregate CD45. And so in this paper, we actually collaborated with Simon Davis's lab, and what they showed is that if you take our T cells that we've engineered to have elongated CD2, they actually do indeed have reduced phosphatase exclusion if the elongation is sufficiently long. However, for more modest elongations, what we do find is that CD45 continues to be excluded, and you get improved CAR antigen interactions within these contacts.
Okay. So they're not so long that the CD45 is very long, I guess. So you'd only really get into trouble when it got to roughly the same length as CD45.
Yeah, we believe so. That's right.
Okay. So the segregation model lives on.
It does, yeah.
In fact, you've reinforced it, so everybody's happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. So, and then I suppose from the clinical point of view, there's an enormous amount of evolution that can go on in these tumours, so you already described some of it. So have you got a feel for how you might address that? Presumably a tumour could also modulate some of its expression of some of these co-stimulatory receptors.
Yeah, absolutely. There's already documented evidence that in a variety of tumors, CD58, the ligand for CD2, is actually downregulated as well. And so I think the way that this should be approached, of course, is to try to deploy as much of your arsenal as you can, you know, from the get-go. And so, for example, we think improving antigen sensitivity from the start will hopefully reduce relapse in these patients initially. But of course, if they become antigen negative completely, or if they downregulate CD58, we then have to kind of re-engineer our CARs now to target other antigens.
Okay. Actually, that makes a lot of sense from a sort of virological point of view, where if you target two or three regions of the virus, either by T cells or drugs, you've got a much better chance of cure or suppression than...
Yeah, absolutely. And people are now developing CARs that target from the get-go two different antigens on the leukemic B cells.
On the same CAR or as a pool of CARs?
They're doing both, actually. There's some studies that are looking at two independent CARs that target two different antigens, and some are taking one CAR and just adding multiple antibody fragments, you know, okay, SCVs, to its extracellular domain.
Okay, so there's plenty of work to do. And perhaps I could just ask you, because you've spun out a company and it's on the preprint, so perhaps you could, which sounds very exciting. So that's presumably complementing, expanding on, or how does it relate to this piece of work?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so we've kind of, you know, as a basic science lab, we've kind of shown the principle of how we think you can modulate antigen sensitivity for these CAR T cells. And we've largely tested it with these toy antigens in a very controlled setting. But of course, we now want to exploit that to improve, you know, these CAR T cells, basically to urgently treat these relapse patients and hopefully treat and hopefully prevent relapse from happening in the first place. And we thought the best way to do that is to actually set up a spin-out company. And we were very fortunate that Phil Jakeman, who is the CEO of the company now, at the time was actually at Oxford Science Enterprises. And he had this fantastic job of talking to Oxford academics to kind of see what, you know, new research might be able to be translated. And I think he basically picked up on that there could be some, you know, useful technology here. And working with him, we managed to make a business case and secure some venture capital from Oxford Science Enterprises to set up MatchBio, which is now focused on deploying this technology to a variety of different cancer indications.
Great. So are you going to work with other companies then that generate the CAR Ts, or are you going to be generating your own CAR Ts for therapy?
I think at the moment the kind of plan is a bit open, and we're very fortunate that investors have allowed us to kind of keep options open. So what we want to do now is again show proof of principles to a number of different antigen targets, and then we'll see, you know, which what are the most promising leads.
That sounds incredibly exciting, to go from essentially a kind of structural biology approach to something so translatable in one move through more or less one piece of work. It's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of it, as you know, is that I think T-cell immunologists these days are kind of at the right time, at the right place, and there's so much infrastructure already that makes our, you know, translation of T-cell work.
Do you think, I mean, there seems a little bit from the outside that the CAR Ts, you know, have got this really important role now in hematological tumors, but they're not necessarily making such an impact on solid tumors. And are any of the features of your model, are they relevant to that issue, or are there other things entirely about the biology that we need to think about?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good question. The jury is still a little bit out on exactly why they're failing in solid tumors. There's lots of fantastic hypotheses which people are now exploring. And I think my guess is that there won't be kind of one solution to this. It might be a combination of different technologies that will have to come together to enable them to hit solid tumors. But I think that low antigen density, you know, can be an issue. And improving that, I imagine, would help in rapidly killing, solid tumors.
If it's a kind of every T cell can do a bit of a better job, then you should be kind of pushing it in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly.
Great. Well, that's been very exciting. And perhaps the last question would be, like, what apart from the company which you've described, where does it all go next? Obviously, you're waiting for reviewers' comments and so forth. So, but what would the plans be for the future?
Well, we sort of stumbled, on the activity of CD2 on these CAR T cells. But as you mentioned, you know, T cells express a whole host of these co-stimulation and co-inhibition receptors. And we sort of think of them in this kind of binary classification. And what our lab is really interested in trying to understand is, in some sense, go beyond this binary classification and sort of subclassify these molecules according to whether they selectively improve sensitivity or efficacy. And we also heavily study antigen discrimination, you know, this ability of T cells to differentiate between self and non-self antigen. And we want to see whether some of these molecules can modulate the activity of discrimination. And we also study what we call antigen adaptation, you know, this observation that when T cells see persistent antigen, they stop responding. And we've previously identified some co-stimulation molecules that can allow T cells to overcome that. And again, we're sort of developing assays to very quickly screen these molecules for these activities using this platform that I mentioned, where we could couple proteins directly on the cell surface. That's allowing us effectively to generate, you know, antigen-presenting cells with any combination and concentration of surface molecules within just a few minutes. And using that platform, we can now finally identify the quantitative phenotype of these co-stimulation and co-inhibition molecules.
Well, thank you very much. I think if people hear that, they'll be knocking on your door. So hopefully you'll get some visitors soon from around the campus. Anyway, thank you very much, Omar, and good luck with the paper.
Okay, thanks so much, Paul.